the future shiurim, and please contact the office. So I'd like to first of all begin by acknowledging the Mashkiach of Keren B'Yavne, Rabbi Avram Rivlin, who is the author of the Sefer called Yonah Nevuah V'Tochacha. It is a Sefer which is devoted exclusively to Sefer Yonah. I had the personal privilege of hearing shiurim, actually several shiurim, even on Sefer Yonah from Rivlin when I was in the yeshiva. He has numerous other svarim as well. I am not going to quote him repeatedly throughout the shiur, but virtually all of that which I'm going to share with you tonight is inspired directly by his teachings, by his drashos. So, as was mentioned already, as we know, on Yom Kippur we do read Sefer Yonah. Later on the source, you will actually see the makor for that comes from the Gemara Megillah. But let's just accept for the moment, as we know, that we read the Sefer Yonah. So the question is why? That is something that perhaps may seem obvious, but it's certainly not. And I can make that point by just letting you know that there are, as far as I've seen, no fewer than half a dozen different explanations that we find in the classic commentaries on the Gemara, and I'm sure there are likely more as well. So it's certainly not clear, and I'm sure there's not one answer as to why it is that we read Sefer Yonah on Yom Kippur. I think generally, most of us assume that Sefer Yonah is a Sefer that deals with tshuva. There are different populations, different individuals, different episodes that happen in Sefer Yonah, and we can discuss tshuva in each and every one of those individuals' settings. Of course, and this is really going to be part of tonight's discussion, Sefer Yonah is a Sefer that reminds us that ultimately there is accountability in the world. And, you know, forgive the expression, you can run, but you can't hide. And that, of course, is a message which certainly seems to resonate, particularly on the day of Yom Kippur. And then there are other answers, some of which are more complex, that I'm not going to discuss tonight. But I did want to introduce one particular theme that is really pervasive throughout the entire Sefer Yonah. And this may give us a very meaningful insight, one that I think we can really take away something very practical if we listen to the message and we try to apply it as to what it is that we can learn from Sefer Yonah and why it is that we read Sefer Yonah on Yom Kippur. So, of course, Sefer Yonah is about a prophet. Yonah is a Navi, Yonah is a prophet. And I'm going to ask a question. And again, the answer may seem obvious, but I don't think it is. What is the primary responsibility of a prophet? What is the role of a Navi? What is a Navi supposed to do? So I think, generally, in the world, in the Welt, if you would, if you would go ahead and ask somebody, what is the role of a prophet? What does a prophet do? So most people would assume that what a prophet could do is a prophet can offer us an insight into the future, can make predictions which have been divinely inspired, and can give us a sense of what's coming down the line. There are individuals who sometimes have a great desire, a great need to sort of access these channels to get some sort of insight as to what is going on in my life, how can I explain the things that I don't understand. People have this this insatiable need to know what's going to be. And so therefore, a prophet can provide us with that information. And when we think of the word nevuah, prophecy, we really think in terms of a premonition, a prediction or a declaration of that which God tells us is going to happen in the future. But if you take a look at the first source on the page, in source number one, Sefer Yekarim from Yosef Albo, so he says that's not so. He says, Iker mitzias ha-nevuah b'min ha-adam, eino kedei lahagir ha-asidol, selesadu inyanim pratiyim me'ishiyim, kamosh yodei azal yedekosmim v'achozim ha-kochavim. He says the primary reason why God has introduced prophecy into the world, and he has given the world prophets, is not so that we can know what's going to be in the future. And it's certainly not, he says, to satisfy the needs of specific individuals to know what's going to be in particular situations. Aval kedei lahagia ha'uma b'chlala ohamin el hashlemus ha'anoshi. He says, rather, the purpose of a prophet is, when necessary, to enable, to assist the nation b'chlala as a whole, and he says, and even all of humankind, to be able to achieve our ultimate goals, our ultimate destiny. As if to suggest that there are times that God needs to stage what we would call today an intervention. That God needs to intervene in the world. that despite the hashkacha, which is pervasive, bechlal uveprat, throughout the entire world, that God is a very strong providence in the world, the role of a Navi is to sort of nudge that process along when it is necessary. I'll ask you another question. Again, maybe obvious, but it's going to help sort of set the stage for tonight's discussion. What is the primary tool, the mechanism, that a prophet uses to carry out his mission? So, again, should be obvious, and that is his mouth. A Navi, by definition, speaks. That's what a Navi must do. What's really remarkable and fascinating, and I can only tell you, I never noticed this before Rav Rivlin pointed out to me, in source number 2, we just read this several weeks ago in Parsha Shoftim, the Torah talks about a Navi, and when speaking about the concept of Nevuah, and over here, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, post Maimed Har Sinai, God says, I am not going to be interacting with you or speaking with you directly, but I will by way of a prophet. And if you take a look at midway through the paragraph, the first sentence is bolded, Navi Akim Lahem Mikerev Acheihem Kamocha, that there will be Navi and there will be a prophet like you, the like you is like Moshe Rabbeinu here, V'nasati Devarai Befiv V'diber Aliyem Es Kol HaSheretz Avenu. Just appreciate the words that the Torah uses to describe the role of the Navi. V'nasati Devarai, I will place my words Befiv in his mouth V'diber Aleihem. And this refrain continues. V'oyoyish asher lo yishma el Devarai asher yedaber ishmi. And if there should be a prophet who does not, an individual does not listen to the words of a prophet, Anochi Adrosh Mimo, says God, I will deal with him. But a Navi who speaks in a way that he was not instructed to do so, and he speaks in the name of other gods, this Navi is Chayiv Misa. Maybe you'll say, how do I know if this is truly what God has said or not? That which God, a Navi speaks in the name of God, that something will happen, and it doesn't happen. If the Navi prophesies about something, it doesn't happen. So you can be sure that he is a false prophet, and you should not be intimidated by him. But what you should appreciate, and I didn't count the words, and I'm not going to do them right now, but just looking back at this paragraph, how many times one form of the word Davar appears again and again and again and again, sort of driving home this point that a Navi's job is to speak. That is his role, lidaber, to speak. In fact, the word Navi itself, Rashi tells us, comes from the word Niv. Take a look at the pasuk in Yeshayahu, source number 3, Bored Niv Sefasayim, that God has created Niv Sefasayim, something that is coming through the lips. The Niv over here refers to language. Says Rashi, Adam Hamachriz Mashmiel Am Divrei Tochachos. This is another who speaks, as the pasuk says, Niv Sfasayim. The pasuk in Mishle, Yanuv Chachma. The pasuk says, Pi Tzadik, the mouth of a Tzadik, Yanuv Chachma. So the word Navi itself, Nevua, means to speak. Now, in general, and this is something you've heard from me in the past, when we speak about the Koach Hadibur, the power of speech of man, each and every individual has a tremendous gift, the capacity to speak. And this is something which could be used in a very constructive way, and it can also be very destructive. We could argue that a Navi is given an even greater koach hadibur, or the potential with that mouth is even greater, which would explain, as the Rambam introduces the concept of a Navi in the second, seventh paragraph of Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, in source number 5, the Rambam tells us that not everybody is going to be qualified to be a Navi. Says the Rambam, Ein HaNavuah Chala, Ela HaChacham Gadol B'Chachma Givor B'Midosav, which is sort of paraphrasing the Gemara, but then the Rambam goes on to elaborate extensively, in great detail, I'm not going to read this inside right now, how a Navi must be super qualified, must have great, great spiritual accomplishments to be able to receive a prophecy. So we're talking about a person who is not just capable of speaking, but has this tremendous, tremendous power with the mouth. This is the Koach HaDibur. And finally, as part of this introductory message, the Koach HaDibur, this ability and this need that a prophet has to relate, to share, to give over a message from God, is fundamentally different than that which we could probably relate to. In fact, we could turn to the prophets themselves who describe the experience of having a prophecy and feeling the tremendous need even if they don't really want to, even if there's some reluctance and hesitation in doing so, to go ahead and to share that. It's almost like the words are bursting outside of them. Look at the pasuk in source number 6 from Yirmiyahu Navi. Im yisaser ish bamistarim v'ani lo erenu ne'um Hashem. God says, can a man hide and I won't find him, I won't see him? Halo es ha-shamayim v'es-aretz ani maleinu Hashem. Says God, I fill the entire world, you can't hide from me. Hanavi asher ito chalom yisaper chalom. Once again, appreciate the refrain, davar, davar, davar. If a Nabi has a dream, if he has a vision, if he has words that have been communicated with him, he must speak them. And look at these last words. Says the Nabi Yirmiyahu, the words of God inside of me are like a fire. And they are forcing me to sort of expel them. And the words themselves are like a hammer, like a sledgehammer that shatters rock. I mean, this is not like when a person says, you know, there's something I'd like to tell you. So I have this urge to share something that's on my mind. When a Navi has a prophecy inside of him, so there was an urge that we can't really relate to. But the Naviim describe as being something which is completely unparalleled in their own human experience. This need to go ahead and to share that. It's almost like an eruption. That is waiting to take place inside of me. Yom HaNavi, again in source number 7. Just take a look at the last pasuk there. V'amarti lo eskerenu v'lo adaber od b'shmo. And Yirmiyahu says, and maybe I said, you know, maybe I should not mention, maybe I should not speak that which God tells me in his name. V'ayo bilibi ke'esh bo'eres atzur bi'atzmosai v'nelesi chalkel v'lo ucho. Says Yirmiyahu HaNavi, it's like a burning fire inside of me. I can't withhold it. I can't contain it. I have no choice. I must give this over. Which is probably why when Chazal speak about a Navi who does not speak, does not give over the prophecy, it's not called a Navi who doesn't speak. It's one who is Kovesh Es Nevuaso. You know, we're familiar with that term. Chazal tell us, Ezeu Gibor, who is strong, HaKovesh Es Yitzro, a person who is able to suppress a drive and inclination that's very powerful. Well, a Navi has a Nevu inside. And if he is going to withhold it, if he is going to refuse to share it, he's not what we would say, shev yaltase. He's not just sort of sitting back and passively failing to carry out a mission. It requires a great effort on his part to be kovesh, that nevuah. And that's the word, that's a term that Chazal use. Hakovesh es nevuaso, says the Mishnah in source number 8. Okay, now who is the paradigm of kvishas nevuah? Who is perhaps the greatest example of what it means to be Kovesh Es Nevuah? So of course you know the answer, but it's not because it's timely and it's not because it fits the topic of the theme of this night's shiur. Chazal tell us, and I wouldn't be able to say it otherwise, not even on a hunch, says the Gemara there in Sanhedrin Peites, source number 9, HaKovesh Es Nevuaso Kegon Yonah Ben Amitai. Say Chazal, you want to know what it means to be Kovesh Es Nevuaso? You want to know who really exemplifies, if you will, you know, it's not necessarily a midah that a Navi should aspire towards, but the one who really, who serves as the best example of this demonstration of being Kovesh Es Nevuah, so it's Yonah. Yonah is an individual who goes ahead and he's Kovesh Es Nevuah. Now, in all fairness, we can think perhaps of other individuals who were summoned, who were commissioned, solicited by God to go ahead and to speak to the people, and they also express great reluctance. Perhaps the best example is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was reluctant. Chazal tell us, even though the Pesukim don't tell us this, that for 7 days there was a standoff between God and Moshe. And Moshe saying, I don't want it. I can't do it. Send somebody else. Yirmiyahu HaNavi also really, really struggles and says, no, please, I can't, don't. But there are clear differences, several that we can identify. First of all, they refused initially to accept the Shlichus, but they were not, at this point, prophets, meaning they had not sort of assumed that role. And so therefore they are trying to sort of refuse to deflect, to defer, to encourage God to pick somebody else. Yonah actually goes ahead, picks himself up, and he tries to escape. He runs away. That's literally the pasuk we're going to see shortly tells us he did. At the end of the day, Moshe and Yirmiyahu, they both accept the mission. After their initial protest, what are they going to do? They relent. Yonah, on the other hand, takes actual steps and measures to escape. He packs his bags, perhaps he doesn't even do that, forgive my ad-libbing over there, and he runs away. Moshe and Yirmiyahu never did that. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, they engage in a dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Both Moshe and the Torah tells us, take a look in source number 10, we're familiar with this pasuk, Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, Bi Adonai, lo ish devarim anochi, gam etmol, gam shoshom, gam eoz da berecho al avdecha, ki chvad pelch vad lashon anochi. He says, Moshe, please, I can't. I'm not an ish devarim, whatever that means. I'm not articulate. I can't speak. I have a speech impediment, all different interpretations. But Moshe's trying to use a rational, sensible argument to basically say to God, I'm not the man. Yemriyah Navi also says in source number 11, Hine lo yadati da ber, I am not able to speak. After all, I am a na'ar. I am not qualified. I do not have the age, the experience, the stature to be able to serve as your prophet. But Yonah doesn't do that. Yonah simply, he gets up and leaves. And it is perhaps this last difference in particular, which more than anything else sort of defines the essence of this book, or at least the theme that we are going to try to address tonight. And we're going to actually try to make a case that this theme is pervasive throughout the entire Sefer. We're going to stop just short of reading Perek Dalet, but I bring you right there. So if you want, on your own, you can certainly, it's going to require a little more of a close analysis, but giving myself the hour and no more, I'm not going to attempt to go to Perek Dalet, but you'll trust me that Rabbi Rivlin does. He takes it literally from beginning until the very last words of the Sefer. That this theme is pervasive throughout the entire Sefer, namely Yonah's Kavishas Nevuah, Yonah's silence. So now let's take a look, let's read the story together. We're going to read Perek Aleph. What we'll do is we'll just sort of read it without much commentary at all, and then we'll come back and we'll break it down. So story number 12. And as you can see, I did take the English, I think it's good. I looked it over very quickly. It comes from some secular source online, but it looked completely good to me. That God spoke to Yonah. And he said, Kum leich el Ninveh ha'ir ha'gdolah, ukra aleha, ki osa ra'asam lefanai. Get up and go to the great city of Ninveh and speak to them, call to them. Why? Says God, ki osa ra'asam lefanai. Literally because their evil has ascended before me. I have problems with the people in Ninveh, and I need you, Yonah, to go ahead and to intervene on my behalf. Vayakam Yonah livrach Tarshisha milifnei Hashem. Says the Pasuk, Yonah gets up to flee, to escape to Tarshish from before God. Vayered Yafo, he goes down to Yafo, vayimtza aniyah ba'at Tarshish, and he finds a ship that is about to embark towards Tarshish. Vayitein schara, he pays the wage to the fee to get onto the ship, and he descends the ship. He goes on the ship in order to go Tarshisha from God. Pasuk Dalet Vashem Hitil Ruach Gedola Al Hayom, and God sent, as we know, a very strong wind. Vayisar Gadol Hayom, and there was a very very strong and treacherous storm at sea. Vaniyach Hishval Hishaver, and it literally threatened the very survival of the ship. There was concern that the ship would literally break apart. Pasuk Hey, Vayiru Amalachim, Vayezaku Eshel Elohav. So the sailors became afraid for their lives, and they called out to their gods. Vayatilu Es HaKelim Asher Baniyah, and they cast overboard all the kelim, all the vessels, anything that they had with them, they cast overboard, L'Hakelmo Yaleim, in order to lighten the ship, to secure their survival. V'yona Yorad El Yarkisei Asvinah Vayeshka Vayiradam. Yonah descends into the bellows of the ship. He lies down and he goes to sleep. And the captain of the ship calls to him. And he says, Malchon, you're dumb. How could you sleep? Kum, get up. Call to your God. Maybe your God will pay some attention to us and we won't be lost at sea. We won't be destroyed. We won't be killed. Vayomru isha reyehu. So the sailors are panicking. They don't know what to do. They become very superstitious, or maybe this was just their inclination to begin with. They say, we don't know what's going on over here, but clearly this is surreal. We've never experienced anything like this before. So they begin to cast lots. To figure out what is going on over here. Who on board is responsible for this great disaster that is about to take place? They cast lots, and as we know, the lots fall on Yonah. Vayomre love, and they say to him, Hagida nolanu, please tell us, Basher lumi harahazos lanu, What's going on? What have you done to bring this upon us? Ma malachtecha? What do you do for a living? U'meyayin tavo? And where are you coming from? Mo artzecha? What's the land where you either come from or you're going to? Ve'im yizeh amata? What nation do you belong to? Who are you? They say to Yonah. Vayomer aleihem. And he says to them, Ivri anochi, ve'aseh Hashem Elokei Hashemayim ani yarei, asher aso esayom ve'aseh yabasha. And Yonah responds very powerfully, and not tonight, but another night we will talk about what this expression means, and this just gives us not even an insight at this point, but a reminder that Yonah is a special person, and that shouldn't be lost on us tonight. There is another, Yonah has a position over here, which we're really not going to explain tonight. But he declares with complete faith, Ani ba'amim be'amunah shalema, he says, Ivri anochi, I am a Jew, v'es Hashem elokai yashamayim ani yarei, and I fear God, God who made the sea and the dry land. Va'yiru anashim yira gedolah. And now everybody on board is completely afraid, because now they've identified the God who is behind this, the God of the sea. V'yom rei lov, and they say, Mazos asisa, what did you do? Ki adu anashim ki milufnei Hashem hu bareach ki yigid lahem. They were able at this point to put the pieces together, and it's a question among the Mefarshim as to what exactly he did tell them, but essentially he provided them with the information they needed to come to the conclusion that he was fleeing from God, and God was after him. Vayomrei lov, and they said to him, Manaselach, what could we do to you, or for you, or with you? V'yishtalcha yom yaleinu ke yom holeich v'sawer. What could we do to quiet the seas? Because they are threatening us again, and the storm is getting more and more violent. And he says to them, arguably an act of great mesiras nefesh, again, too soon to really comment, sa'uni v'hatiluni layam, lift me up and cast me into the sea. V'yushtok hayomi aleichem, and I can assure you that the seas will quiet. Ki yodei ani ki b'shali asar ha'gadol hazeh aleichem, because I know that this entire storm is here because of me. V'yachtru anashim lo'ashiv al yabasha, but they didn't want to, so they try harder to row themselves back to shore. But they couldn't. They couldn't compete with the waves, with the winds, with the storm. It was overpowering them. And now, in an act of, we'll call this a pre-confession, they call out to God. And they say, please do not hold us responsible for this. Do not consider this an act of cold-blooded murder. You are the one who was calling the shots. We're following your lead. This seems to be what you want. Vayesu es Yonah, they lift him up. Vayatilu al hayam, they throw him into the sea. Vayamod ha'am yizapo. And as we know, the storm suddenly comes to a halt. Vayiru anashim, the parak concludes with the words, the men became suddenly even more afraid and awed and inspired. Yiragid Allah Hashem. Vayizbechu zevach l'Hashem, vayidruna darim. They brought sacrifices to God, and they took vows and pledges, committing themselves after experiencing this extraordinary moment. So now, don't even turn the page, because we're going to break this down. We read it, and I really tried to refrain from much commentary, try to make it a little dramatic, but I think it's dramatic without me. It's a very dramatic parak. It's one of the reasons why we teach Yonah little children. It's so powerful. It's fascinating. It's enthralling. But now we're going to break it down and perhaps discover some very, very fascinating clues, if you will, to tell a bigger story that children don't necessarily pick up on automatically. So let's go back to the very first pasuk, or really the second one over here. Pasuk Beis. Kum lech al Nineveh. Hashem says to Yonah, get up. When do you say to a person, get up? When do you say, kum? What? When a person is sitting down, when a person is in somewhat of a relaxed, perhaps a lethargic state, and before instructing them further, you say, get up. Get up and. So that's exactly the way God addresses Yonah. Kum lecha Nineveh. When Hashem tells Avram Avinu, for example, to go ahead and to travel to another land, he says, lech lecha. He doesn't say, kum lech lecha. He says, lech, go. But over here it says, kum. And already, before we know anything about Yonah, we could perhaps get the sense that God recognizes that he's up against a force. I'm going to call Yonah stubborn, but not, God forbid, in a disrespectful, in a trivial way. But he's a force. And he is making a decision for some reason that we don't yet know to sit down, to be, as we said before, not just passive, but to be kovesh, this force within. And God tells him, get up. Leich al Nineveh, and go to the city of Nineveh. Ukra alecho ki al sam rasam lefanai. Vayakam Yonah, so Yonah gets up. So far so good. Things are looking good. Livroach, but he gets up to run away. So the optimism that this pasuk begins with suddenly comes to a screeching halt. He gets up to run away. He doesn't say anything to God, as we pointed out beforehand. Rather to escape, milifnei Hashem. Vayered Yafo, and he goes down to Yafo. Vayimso aniyo ba'ot Tashish, vayitein schara, vayered balavoyim ohem Tashishim lifnei Hashem. Rav Rivlin points out, and he acknowledges that this is not necessarily conclusive, but he thinks it's interesting, and he's somebody who's certainly a qualified Baki in Tanakh, needless to say, that it's interesting that Yonah says nothing here. Now, this point is going to be proven again and again and again throughout the Sefer, but even here, he thinks, you know, he's doing a lot of things. It seems almost as if he comes over, again, we can't prove this, and he looks at the sign and he pays money. He doesn't even say good morning, good afternoon, shalom aleichem, have a good night. He just literally, quietly, almost as if, says Rav Lipton, almost as if he's engaged in a Tanis Dibur over here. Very quiet. In terms of Yonah's decision to flee, you should know, by the way, that Chazal sort of echo and maybe amplify that which the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says over here, Levroach milifnei Hashem. I want you to go back to the Pesukim, but if you take a just quick peek at source number 13 and 14. So 13, the Yalkut Shimoni says, Amar Yonah, Eilech lechutz laaretz, she'ena shechina nigla isham. Wow, he had a real Yiddish cup. He says, I want to go ahead and avoid having to deal with God right now, so where should I go? I'll go to Tinek. I'll go to Chutz Laaretz because I know there's no Shechina there, and God won't speak to me there. God only speaks to Nevi'im in Eretz Yisrael. It was a chap. That's why he decides to go to Tashish. Or as the Medrash says, Harini boreach liyam makam shalo nemar shem kivodo. What does the Pasuk say? I believe this is what the Medrash means. Melo chol haaretz kivodo. The world, the land is filled with God's glory, not the yom. So Yonah says, I'll do whatever I can. I'm going to take a ship. I'm not going to take the train. I'm going to take the ship, immediately go out to sea, and just try to, you know, go beneath the radar where God can't get to me. Again, this is profound. This is profound. It seems on a certain level so trivial. It seems juvenile. It seems hard to really relate to. But Yonah over here is on a very, very, very clear mission to avoid having to encounter this discussion that God is trying to engage him in, and to accept this mission. The pasuk continues in source number in pasuk Dalid. Vashem itil ruach gadol al hayam, vayisar gadol al hayam aniyach yishval yishaver. There's this great storm. Vayu amalachim, and suddenly the sailors, they're afraid. And what do? They start davening. Winds are howling. Water is thrashing. Sailors are screaming. Yonah, he's looking for a comfortable bed, and everybody else on the boat is panicking. And the way they express their panic is vayizaku. They don't just daven, they scream out. They raise their voices. Their voices can be heard everywhere. And Yonah, he escapes. And take a look between Pasuk Gimel, Dalid, and Hey, how many times the Pasuk uses a form of the word Yorad. Vayered Yafo, Vayered Ba, Vayona Yorad Yakase Asvino, Vayishkabe Yeradam. What does that mean to go down? So I know we have at least one anesthesiologist over here. In modern Hebrew, the word for anesthesia is hardama. It's different than sleep. Sleep is something that happens naturally. When the Pasuk says, Vayapel Hashem Elokim al Adam tardema, so it means that God induced the sleep upon Adam. He put him down. He put him to sleep. So over here, the Pasuk says again and again and again that Yonah is essentially trying to fall asleep. Certainly literally, as the Pasuk says, he literally looks for a bed, by Yishkav, he lies down, by Yeradam. Mm-hmm. But again, as we know, and certainly if you remember what it's like, or maybe you still live with or once lived with teenagers, you know that adults do this as well. But teenagers in particular find sleep to be an amazing, amazing escape. Halavai should be the worst escape that our teenagers ever run towards. But it's an escape. It's just a way to just not have to deal with the stress, with the thing, people that are on my case, and the teachers and my parents and my responsibilities. Just go to sleep. Little kids, they don't like sleeping. At the crack of dawn, they're up running around because life is wonderful. They don't have anything to run away from. But a person who starts to feel the pressures, the stresses of life, so going to sleep can be an incredible way to sort of manage that. It's not healthy. I mean, 8 hours a night is healthy, but it's not good to escape. But just appreciate within the pasuk over here, how the pasuk is saying again and again and again, Vayered, Vayered, Vayarad, Vayaradam. He's going, going, going. He's trying to go down. He's trying to induce etar deima upon himself. So the captain of the ship comes to him and he says, how could you sleep? And what does he say? Kum kara. Let me ask you, my friends, do those words sound familiar? Who says kum kara? Hashem says kum kara. That's Pasuk Beis. Kum, get up. Kara, speak to the people of Nineveh. And now this captain, we have no reason to assume that this guy is in any way whatsoever, spiritually qualified, informed, knowledgeable in any way whatsoever to be able to be giving Musar to the great prophet Yonah. And here he is, he's mamish, like speaking the words of the prophets, words, weak words of God. Kum kral kecha, call to your God. Look at who's giving Musar. Look at who's davening. And to all of this, what does Yonah say? Absolutely nothing. Complete and total silence. No response. Nothing whatsoever. The captain, the pasuk doesn't tell us this, but it's as if he grabs him by the collar, he looks at him in the eyes, and he says, speak, say something, and Yonah says nothing. And rather than just go ahead and pick him up, throw him overboard, they convene a meeting, and they say, let's try to go ahead and cast lots. I don't know what's going on over here, so they cast the lots. Vayapila Gorolos, the Malbim tells us over here, not Gorol, but Gorolos, multiple lots. They did again, and again, and again, because the first time it doesn't prove anything. The second time, the third. And no matter how many times they would draw lots, again, it kept on falling on Yonah's head. So they realized that this is the guy, clearly. So they come back to him. Pasuk Ches Vayomer Elov, Hagidin Alon, tell us, please, Asher Lemia Razos Lanu, Ma Malachtecha, count with me. What do you do for a living? Umei Ayin Tavim, where are you coming from? Ma'aretzecha, what's your land? Ve'imizeh Amata, what nation do you belong to? Four questions. Now this is the first time Yonah actually speaks. And again, it's a very powerful declaration. In fact, it's been made into a song recently. I'm not going to sing it. Ivri Anochi V'Hashem Elokei HaShemayim Ani Yorei. I'm a Jew. But let me ask you, how many questions did he actually answer? One? Where are you coming from? He doesn't answer that. What's your land? He doesn't answer that. What nation do you belong to, I suppose? Ma Malachtecha, he doesn't answer that. So he responds, because he's provoked and he's... Something triggers him and he responds. He feels the need to do so, but he doesn't answer their questions. Certainly not in any straightforward way whatsoever. And now the sailors on the boat feel that they sort of need to take matters into their own hand. They realize that things are not going well. Yonah is not cooperating. He is not being compliant. He is not assisting them in their efforts to save him. And so therefore they say to him, listen, what do you want us to do? You need to work with us over here. And he says, throw me overboard. And even though the pasuk doesn't tell us this, you get the impression, they say, what? Throw you overboard? That's it? Don't you want to daven first? Don't you want to at least try? Don't you want to communicate with your God? Maybe he'll give you a little break? Maybe let you out on bail? You just want to go ahead and essentially commit suicide? That's it? That's the plan? And Yonah says, yeah, that's the plan. That's what I want. Now take a look at source number 15. This was so beautiful, I was in no way whatsoever going to attempt to say this over with my own amateur tongue. This comes straight from the Sefer. And it's important that there be at least one quote directly from Sefer Yonah Nevuah V'Tochachah V'Rivlin, source number 15. Read this together with me, it's fascinating. Hamalachim Sho'alim Shuv. The sailors ask him, Mana Selachav Yishto Ka'ami Aleinu Ki'ayam Holech V'Soer. What could we do to silence the sea? Because the sea is again in rage, raging in this violent storm. Nasim lev lematach sheyotzrim hapoalim shotek v'soer. He says, pay attention to the tension that is generated in this pasuk between these two words, these verbs, shotek, which means silent, and soer, which means raging, screaming. Hayom soer b'makom l'shtok. The sea, rather than being sort of silent and peaceful, is screaming and raging. Ki Yonah shall take b'makom l'soar. Because Yonah has made the choice to be silent rather than enraged, which is his job as a Navi. V'shuv mishamshim ha-malachim b'li das. And now the sailors, without even realizing it consciously, just like the captain beforehand, they are essentially carrying God's rebuke directly to Yonah. Yonah mevin kinireh. It would seem that Yonah realizes, as divrei amalachin la'omek, he realized the depths of what they're saying. He recognizes that he could silence the sea by merely agreeing to let go of his devua, to allow the rage, so to speak, to come out. In exchange for his acceptance of this mission to go to Nineveh. But since he refuses to do so, he refuses to break his silence. Instead, he puts forth a brazen suggestion. He says, if you want, throw me overboard. And then the sea will be silent. Because I know that the great storm, the raging violent storm, is because of me. So Yonah basically says, the only way that you're going to silence the sea is in taking extreme measures. Not by submitting himself to the instructions of God. Not by giving in, by allowing the fire inside of him. Remember the pasuk from Yirmiyahu HaNavi, the fire to go ahead and burst forth. But rather through this very extreme form of silence, and even, if need be, by death, which of course is the most extreme form of silence imaginable. Ultimately, Yonah's decision to commit himself to, so to speak, this ultimate silence was enough to silence the sea. Hamalachim enam mekablim es tatzah, so they don't want to accept it. They would much rather silence the sea by Yonah just opening his mouth. Therefore, they try to bring him back to the land so he can do what he's supposed to do. They just don't succeed. And so therefore, we see clearly throughout the entire first parak that even though Yonah does have a line and Yonah does speak, clearly what we see over here, and there's no other conclusion that we could possibly reach, that Yonah insists to the end on being quiet. Despite the many messages that were sent his way, let's just review them. The winds, the storm, the perilled ship, the sailors who are crying out to their gods, the captain, the sailors reminding Yonah of his responsibilities, and then, of course, the final messenger, the one that we read about in the beginning of the next parak, Vayiman. Actually, some have this at the end of the first parak, some verse in the beginning of the second parak, Vayiman Hashem dog gadol livlo es Yonah. And God appoints a great fish to swallow Yonah, Vayi Yonah b'mei adog shlosho yamim shlosho leilos. And Yonah's there for 3 days and three nights. Now we will not talk about whether or not this story, or this aspect of the story, is to be understood metaphorically. There's much discussion about that among the Rishonim, as to whether or not there are different ways to understand. Maybe a dog doesn't even mean a fish. Maybe it means a whole school of fish. There are many different possibilities. But we're going to, for the purpose of our discussion tonight, just take this the way we learned it in school. Not a whale, even though we sometimes say that, and it makes for a catchy title like next week's share, but a fish. That's what a dog is, a fish. The ultimate, perhaps, message, if you will, that God sent him. And remarkably, even here, despite the very clear messages of being sent his way, for 3 days and three nights, as far as we can tell, Yonah sits there absolutely quiet, refusing to speak. Again, forgive me, I don't mean to make this sound silly or disrespectful, but like a kid who's sent to his room, the man says, all you need to do is apologize. And, you know, an hour later, 2 hours later, 3 hours later, just listening. Are you hungry? Silence. You want to come out? Silence. And you imagine? Next morning, silence. Another morning, silence. 3 days and three nights, nothing. Yonah refuses to speak. He refuses to daven. And then finally, Yonah davens. And essentially, this is an entire second parak. Beautiful. Yonah davens, and it's a beautiful tefillah. And now we are not going to address the details of this prayer. That's actually going to be the subject of, I believe it's next week. Yes, next week's shiur is on the topic of this tefillah, what it is and what it isn't. But for the purpose of our discussion tonight, and you can look very quickly yourself, You know, let's just read the English. Let's go through this very quickly. From inside the fish, Yonah prayed to Hashem as God. He said, in my distress, I called to Hashem and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me, and your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again towards your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me, the deep surrounded me, seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down, the earth beneath me barred me in forever. But you, Hashem, my God, brought me life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Hashem, and my prayers rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I say salvation comes from Hashem. And Hashem commanded the fish, Vayakian, and vomited Yonah onto the dry land. A beautiful tefillah. And again, we're not doing it justice right now, and you'll have to come back next week for a more careful analysis. But I think, and I hope it's clear, and I don't want you to feel like I'm making you come to this conclusion if you haven't already reached it on your own, that what's pretty remarkable is what we don't find, at least explicitly, in this tefillah. What don't we find? We don't find an apology. We don't find an acknowledgement. We don't find regret. We don't find resolve. We find resolve for something, an allusion to fulfilling vows, sacrifices, kabbanos, maybe. And maybe, as some of Farshim suggests, that's basically Yonah saying, fine, I'll go. But it's far from explicit. A commitment on Yonah's part. Saying, fine, you know, you got me. I thought I can escape, but I didn't. Well, yeah. This is, again, it's a beautiful tefillah. It's kedai to read on Yom Kippur just for that tefillah alone. It's absolutely beautiful. But that's the best we can do? After 3 days, after that big storm, about after everybody throwing their stuff overboard, and Yonah basically tried to essentially die, and God would not even allow him to escape by death. And that's all he has to say. So it's almost as if his silence continues. But of course, this paragimel. And I don't have the entire paragimel over here, but we have the part that we need. Pasuk 19. I'm sorry, source number 19. First pasuk of paragimel. Vayhi dvar Hashem al Yonah shenis lemor. God speaks again to Yonah. Kum! Get up! There is that word again. What does the word kum imply? He's not feeling it. You know, he's just relaxing, sitting back. You would think that paragimel would begin with the following words. And Yonah jumped out of that fish, you know, tightened his tie, and ran all the way to Nineveh as quick as he can get there. That's what you would think paragimel would begin, but it doesn't. It begins all over again. Hashem says, Kum. Leich el Nineveh ha'ir ha'gadola ukra aleha. The same words as if Yonah forgot. Go ahead and go to the great city of Nineveh and speak to them. Although this time, God does not even tell him why. Before he said, Ki asara sam lefanai, it's almost as if perhaps Kodesh Baruch is a little frustrated with Yonah. I don't have to repeat myself and tell you why. I'm telling you what I need you to do. And Asher Anochi Dover Alecha, which we didn't find beforehand. God says, I'm going to tell you exactly what I want you to say. So this is anything but a comfortable relationship right now. Yonah's essentially still on strike. He agrees to go. And God is basically telling him, no, get up, go to Nineveh. You know what you need to do. And yes, I'll tell you exactly what you need to say when you get there. Yonah should know what he needs to say. The prophets know what they need to say. But over here, Hashem tells him, and this, we didn't find this earlier, I'm going to tell you exactly what to say. Interestingly, the Gemara notes, when it says over here that Hashem spoke a second time, Vayidvar Hashem al Yonah Shenis Lemor, so I said the Gemara Yivamos, this is a bit haunting, says the Gemara source number 20, Shenis Dibur Imo Shechina, Shlishis Lo Dibur Imo Shechina. This was the second and the last time. You know, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's Erech HaPayim, Rav Chesed Yemes, this is it. Shenis. This wasn't just the second time, it was the last time. Here's Yonah's chance to get it right. Vayakum Yonah vayelech al Nineveh kedvar Hashem. Yonah gets up, and he goes to Nineveh, as God instructed him. V'Nineveh yosair gedola lelukim ha'alech shloshes yamin. Nineveh is a very big city, we know that already. Apparently it takes 3 days to travel from one end to the other. So, if you were a prophet being sent to Nineveh, how would you manage that? What would you do? You'd probably start at a certain point and go around. You know, spread the word. You know, drop flyers. Maybe have a couple events, a couple of parlor meetings, Facebook Live. You do whatever you need to do in order to get the message out. It's not what Yonah does. He essentially walks for one day. He probably gets close to the center of the city. He gets up and he says, he says, 40 more days, folks, and Nineveh is going to be turned upside down. And the Gemara points out that that's an ambiguous expression, which can actually mean, if you want, you could still turn things around. But that's it. That's his speech. Five words. Rabbi Rivlin says, and I take his word for it, the shortest nevuah in all of Tanakh. That's it. Five words. Od arba'im yom v'ninveh ne'apachis. That's it. He says it once. If you were there for the message, fine. If not, you're on your own. That's basically it. No elaboration, no explanation, no pleading with the people, no being mochiach them, saying, you know, you can improve this way, you can improve that way. It's remarkable, and again, not the discussion for tonight, but I think this is the topic of the third shiur. It's remarkable that Nineveh actually does tshuva. We'll talk about the tshuva of Nineveh when we get there. But he didn't really give them much to work with. Yonah does not really, you know, you have to imagine. They'll say, what did he say? Did he say what we think of him? Who's that guy? I don't know. Everybody going around their business. That was it. Od arba'im yom v'ninveh ne'apachas. That's the whole message. Now, I want to, before I sort of segue into my concluding remarks, I want to reiterate sort of a disclaimer, which I said earlier, and that is that tonight's shiur is about the silence of Yonah. I'm about to share with you what I think we can take from this. But I think it's very, very important that if you came for tonight, you walk away again, even if you can't be here next week and it'll be recorded, you can listen to it. And even if you choose not to listen to it, you must know and you must hear me say that we have been very critical and very harsh of Yonah. And it's very difficult for some of you, perhaps, to be melamed tzchus for Yonah right now and to come up with any justification you find as to how this is acceptable behavior. You know, please, this is God himself who's commissioning you. And with all due respect, Yonah, who do you think you are? But believe it or not, there is another side. There is a very, very strong and compelling defense that can and we will issue in defense of Yonah. This is not to say that Yonah's right, is wrong. You know, ultimately, it's not my place to say. But we judged him very harshly and critically tonight, and the psukim seemed to bring us to that almost inescapable conclusion. But there is definitely room for a much more nuanced approach, not necessarily within the text the way we read it, but to understand a little more broadly and some of the background as to where Yonah's coming from. And Yonah over here is not a person who's burned out. He's not a person who's just frustrated or he's lazy and wants to be left alone. He is a person with a mission. He's a very driven person. I called him before stubborn. He has a point that he's trying to make. And we'll discuss the details of that point, I believe, in the last year. Did I tell you next week? If I told you next week, it's not next week. The last year. The one that comes out close to Yom Kippur is the one when we will speak about Yonah. And I think that's a very, very powerful message going into Yom Kippur itself. Now, I asked you before, why do we read Yonah on Yom Kippur? And I mentioned that there are several different explanations. The one that, of course, resonates most after tonight's shiur comes from the Abu Jaham in source number 23. V'atam laftorah zu, says the Abu Jaham, why is it that we read this haftorah? L'lameid l'bnei olam, she'ein adam yachol livroach m'bnei Hashem im'aver averos. That if a person has sinned, you cannot escape. Very simple, very straightforward, very powerful, very overwhelming, very frightening, indeed. But that's the message of Yonah. You can run, you can get on a boat, you can hide, but I will find you, says God. And this is essentially a very, very powerful message that comes through when we read Sefer Yonah. But as I alluded to earlier, I think that what Yonah does, and the way he sort of stages this rebellion of sorts, the statement he's trying to make by being kovesh es nevuaso, what he does over here is something which is not all that different that we sometimes do. Of course, this is particularly dramatic, and the circumstances are unusual over here, and not something that we could relate to in any sort of concrete way, but the experience that is being conveyed over here, the idea that there's an individual who knows that there are certain responsibilities that I have, that God is speaking to me, that there are messages that are being sent my way, but I choose just not to deal with it. I choose to essentially close my eyes and go to sleep. So the Zohar makes it very easy for us to sort of reach that conclusion. The Zohar in source number 24, and there's a very, very lengthy analysis. The Zohar, the Vilna Gaon, has a similar way of explaining the entire Sefer Yonah as being, could be understood on a metaphoric level, not necessarily instead of, but in addition to, the Pshat, if you will, of Sefer Yonah. There are other stories that are being told. And the Zohar tells us a story that we're very familiar with. Yonah the Nachas Asvina Da'i Neshmasa D'Barnash. Says the Zohar, the Yonah that is referred to over here that goes into a ship is referring to the soul of man that comes into this world and goes into the body. The Nachta Lahai Alma L'Mehavi Begufa D'Barnash. And is fused with the body. Ukiden Barnash Ozil by Alma Kesvina Bego Yama Rabba the Chashiva L'Sabra. Says the Zohar, as man travels through this world, encounters all sorts of situations which threaten his spiritual survival, and the ship, so to speak, is in danger of being capsized. And what does a person do in this world? Unfortunately, sins. And thinks, oh, I escaped God. Nobody's paying attention. I can do whatever I want. There's no mashkiach. So God sends a very powerful storm. This is the Gezar Din. The Zohar doesn't limit it to the Yemeya Din, to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but it's certainly Minyan Adyoma. We could say certainly the Gezar Din, the Yemeya Din of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, this great storm. I always say it's fascinating that this is hurricane season. It just so happens. Hurricane season. This is hurricane season for us. This is the Gezar Din, says the Zohar. And the Zohar goes on to say, it's so powerful. Comes the Rava Chovel. So what does the Yonah do? This person does. He goes to sleep. I don't want to deal with it. So God sends the Rava Chovel. Who's the Rava Chovel? Says the Zohar. Do Yetzer Tov. The Iu Manikula. The Yetzer Tov. The positive drive, the force within man to do right. Speaks to him. He says, Malachon Yudam, how could you sleep? Get up. You have so many responsibilities. And he says, well, who are you? Where do you come from? What are your goals in life? What do you hope to aspire? What do you hope to accomplish? You can't sleep through life. You have to grow. And this is a very powerful message, that there are times that we choose silence, not necessarily to the extent literally that Yonah does, but we choose to just avoid and evade and not have to deal with the pressures of life and our conscience, which speaks to us and calls to us and says to us, Malach HaNirdam. Now, for years now, some of you have heard me say, because I've been saying this, I had sort of a hunch, and it was an idea that I liked a lot, and it resonates with me very much, that maybe, the reason why we have a tradition to say slichos at such ungodly hours, and again, they're very godly hours, but they feel ungodly because, you know, staying up till after chatzos or waking up before alos hashachar, it's needless to say, very inconvenient and very disruptive and not very conducive. L'chora, for a person who's trying to achieve, you know, a state of mind and being awake and alert and be able to connect and plug in. And here I am, I'm dragging my feet at 4 o'clock in the morning. I can hopefully open my eyes. Why do we do that? So I've suggested in the past, maybe, it's sort of based on this idea, not necessarily directly from Yonah, but how could you sleep? What are you sleeping? It's Erev Rosh Hashanah. Malachon Yirdom, you can't sleep. And who knows, maybe this idea that we even don't sleep on Rosh Hashanah, we try to avoid, we sleep less on Rosh Hashanah, even though it's based on Yerushalmi, that seems to give us a different reason for that. The reason is hard to understand, but it's all part of this idea. This is not a time to sleep. This is not a time of the year that we sleep. And so therefore we say slichos at when we are normally sleeping, as if to say, you can't sleep right now. Malachon Yirdam. Literally you can't sleep, and perhaps more importantly, figuratively. Several weeks ago, I shared this idea with a group of campers in Camp Arashawa. I spent the summer, and I was so fortunate that for the first time I said this over in the presence of somebody who already had started saying slichos at that point. It was Rosh Chodesh Elul, and it was a young woman, actually, who is from Achenu Bnei Sfard, who says slichos throughout the entire month of Elul, but they have a different nusach. First of all, they say the same slichos every night, which is nice. You know, you don't choose. I'm an Ashkenazi, it is. I'll take it. But, you know, they say the same slichos every day. And take a look. I never ever knew this before. It's amazing. The opening words to slichos, source number 25. Slichos that are said during Aseret Tshuva, during the month of Elul. Ben Adam. This is how it starts every night. Ma lecha nirdam. This is the opening words of slichos. yo, fella, how could you sleep? Kum kira. Remember those words? Get up. Kira betachanunim. Cry out to God. Beg him. Shfoch sicha zrosh slicha miadon adonim. Pour out your heart. Beg. Seek forgiveness from Adon Adonim. These are the opening words of slichos. Ben adam alecho nida. So, I think it helps us relate this idea that the Bujam says that we read Yonah on Yom Kippur because it reminds us that we can't escape. That's a very overwhelming, and in some ways it's a very dreadful sort of message. I mean, some people can relate to that, others it's frightening. But I don't know that we need to relate to it in such a dreadful way. It's not all dread and terror. It's about having an opportunity. Dir Shu Hashem Bihimatso. We have an opportunity right now, this time of year, to access God in a way that is not so simple the other times of year. This is a time of year which the Gemara tells us is Neitz Ratzon, where we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where He veils Himself, where He makes Himself close to us in a way that enables us to connect. But the only way we could do that is if we choose to wake up, if we choose to ascend from our slumber and to speak, to communicate. We are not prophets. We are not tasked with the job of going ahead and standing in the center of Times Square and saying, "Oh, Darbayim Yom, in New York City, now Paches." No. It doesn't have to be that dramatic. But just to look in the mirror and to say, I could be doing better. I have things that I need to accomplish in this world. And God is calling me. Kum, kira, get up, speak, act, move, grow. And this maybe, is one very, very important and powerful message that we could learn from Sefer Yonah. So I thank you very much for joining me this evening. The next installment, the next year, will be next week at the very same time. And next week we're going to speak more, we'll take a closer look at Perek Beis. We're going to take a look at the tefillah, the prayer of Yonah, and get a better sense of what exactly Yonah was saying. Thank you so much.